I don't know where I'll put this clip, but while we get ready to see our friends, the Cozers, for the next and final Wheel of Time episode, I thought I'd tell you why I have to end early tonight.
Okay.
I have a meeting at 6:30 sharp.
Right.
But it's a virtual meeting, and it's for being a soccer coach. That's right.
Oh.
About to coach second graders at soccer. I'm very excited.
I feel like my expectations and reality didn't quite...
What did you think it was going to be?
I don't know. A job interview? I don't know.
No. In some ways, it's like an interview because...
What, are they going to tell you no?
No, they're probably going to definitely tell me yes because they needed volunteers.
Right.
All right, I see they're ready. I'm going to load this up. So the first meeting is tonight, and then I start coaching every Monday and Wednesday for the entire summer.
Man.
I know.
Have you ever played soccer?
I did. I actually played soccer kindergarten through, let's say, seventh or eighth grade.
Yeah.
Episode 1044, Unweaving the Wheel of Time, Book 14, The Finale.
We did it. Well, some of us did it.
Welcome to the Sci-Fi Christian, bringing you theology at warp speed. I'm Matt Anderson.
I'm Ben DiVono. We're back.
And tonight we're joined by...
The Cozers. And if you...
Wait, I was going to let them introduce themselves.
Okay.
Go ahead, say your names.
The Cozers.
Yay.
If you've been a loyal listener and never read The Wheel of Time and you've been wondering how many more of these books are there, well, this is it. This is the end.
The finale. We finally made it. I just posted the episode we recorded last week today, so I freshly listened to it. So I'm very prepared for the end of The Wheel of Time, unweaving The Wheel of Time.
Do you kind of wish you'd stuck with it?
Not at all. Not at all. No, I'm glad you guys are talking through it, but no, I definitely made the right choice.
Yeah.
Just think, I have 9 long books worth of time back to use on other things. And I got to learn everything I need to know right here from you guys.
Yeah.
Ben, I bet that maybe in another 10 years time, Matt will think, you know what? I'm older. I've slowed down a little bit now. I think I do have time now to go reread those books. And all that Ben and Melissa talked about, yeah, that sounded so interesting and cool. I am going to go read those books after all.
When he hits 50. I think that you would probably do better. So I think here's the secret for you, and it's probably less for Wheel of Time, but I do think there's a subset of books where you are shooting yourself in the foot by doing audio only.
And this is one?
Yeah. Because I think you were getting lost.
I was getting a little lost. But then, on the other hand, then I'd have a giant book in front of me.
I'm not saying that you should necessarily do that with this, but I think that a goal for you would be to carve out enough reading time of actual reading. Because there's, like, for example... I've been rereading Shakespeare's plays. And I know you tried to listen to a couple.
I tried to listen to one, and it was a horrible experience.
Right.
I did, however, log it on Goodreads.
I know you did. I'd love for us to do a series on Shakespeare, but to do that and to do it effectively, you would have to actually read them. Because listening to them is a terrible idea.
So I'm open to that. I'm totally open to that. Shakespeare, I should definitely read it. I mean, don't you? Aren't you the one that divides all of... The Canon by Dante and Shakespeare?
T.S. Eliot. I guess I'll agree. Anyway, here we are. Wheel of Time.
It's book 14.
And it's the best.
It's the best one?
Well, we'll find out because we're going to rank we're going to rank the series later on. And then the other thing I want to talk about is the other Robert Jordan Wheel of Time material that he never wrote.
Right, and I only know the reference because you mentioned it last week, the Outrigger novels.
That's right.
So we'll talk about that tonight.
There's a few other things that he was going to write.
And listeners, don't worry, as promised, I have in front of me a list of every one of our episodes that we've done on Wheel of Time, which I can track throughout this episode to tell you how long have we really been digging into this Wheel of Time book series. And so I'll start right now. Episode 733.
You know, you have a hard stop tonight. You You have a hard
stop. Don't stop me. Episode 733, Unweaving the Wheel of Time, Book 1. We covered that on July 3rd, 2019. All right, continue. I'll insert that along the way.
All right. Melissa, where would you like to start?
Well, I guess to help rope Matt back into it. Matt, do you remember? So you quit on book 5, but on book 4, when Rand goes to Ruadin, where, you know, that's the Isle in the way, the Isle.
I mean, frankly, I recognized just a few of those words.
I think you went wrong there, Melissa, when you. We lost.
We did lose him for a second, but we'll get him back. Yeah,
clear. Like, I know you don't remember anything.
No, I don't.
All right. Anyway, Rand sees the secret history of the Aiel, and how they failed in what they were supposed to have done, and they started using weapons. They were the peaceful people. Well, now Avyandha, one of Rand's three women, she sees the Aiel's future, and it's where they basically lay down and die. And it seems like it might be set in stone, but a few things happen in this book to sort of leave it open to free will. So anyway, that doesn't have too much to do on the plot, except it's just one of my favorite parts of this ending era. And I don't know, because it's so sad. What if you could see the future and it was just nothing but heartbreak?
Yeah, and I think I like the way that Robert Jordan sets up the whole relationship to the future, because there is this sort of tension between prophecy and what's going to happen, but yet maybe it's not as set as it seems. And I think the series does a good job of threading that needle throughout. But
okay.
What a way to finish. I mean, this is, there's so much you can say about Wheel of Time, good and bad. It's amazing. It's frustrating. There, you know, all these different plot threads. But when you think about how hard it is to end a 14-volume series convincingly, and, you know, you could quibble about this or that, but Jordan and Sanderson did it. They pulled it off.
Yeah, and I'd say most of the loose threads, if not all of them, were tied up and in a pretty satisfactory manner.
I agree. I'm sure there's some here or there that the people who've read this like 87 times could tell you. But yeah, I'd say I can't imagine a more satisfying conclusion to a series this long.
Agreed. So the way the book starts is, all along we've had hints that something's going terribly wrong with the Black Tower. That's where men who can channel go to learn. And Rand started that. Started the Black Tower. Well, now we really get into it here at the last. And it's huge. It turns out that the leader, Tame, has been... he's gone over to the Shadow. And... there is a way to force a channeler, male or female, to turn to the Shadow against their will, to where they have no choice. And so he has been using the Shadow's monsters, Murdral, and then other Shadow channelers, to dark friends, to force people to turn to the Shadow.
Yeah, this is one of the plot elements I think is great that we actually got back to, because it feels like Mazrim Taim had been out there for so long, and then we kind of went away from him, and we hadn't heard from him for a long time, and to have it come back was excellent.
I'm pretty sure this character was around when I was reading.
You're right. Yeah.
I think I recognize this name, so that's quite a while back.
Oh my goodness. What was your favorite Mazrim Taim?
Isn't he the one that released somebody from a jail?
I'm sure he did.
Is that right, Melissa? Did he ever release a bad guy that was, like, imprisoned? I could be wrong about that. Or was he in prison in any of these scenes?
Probably. Oh, it's a long book. It's pretty safe that everything happened to everyone at some point. So thank you.
You're welcome.
Anyway, so Tame was a false dragon. And then the other false dragon is Loghain. and Tame takes Loghain and is trying to force him to the shadow, while a small group of renegade soldiers who have not, they haven't been turned yet, they manage to break in and free Loghain, and that's how the book starts, and it's pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, most of this book is centered on, of course, the last battle, everything leading up to it. I'll say that, you know, I'll tell you that the plot element that I think it works the best outside of Rand fighting the Dark One and all of, you know, all of that stuff. But in terms of maybe the things we haven't been waiting for, and the one I think works the worst. So the best would be, I love the whole section where the four great captains have been put under compulsion and you slowly realize that. That's so well done and well executed.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's just amazing.
Yeah.
The worst.
Yeah, four battlefields and four great generals. And then it seems like for a while everything's going well and everybody, you know, the good guys are winning. And then just they start taking massive losses. But it's just a little bit here and a little bit there. And slowly it turns out the Forsaken are interfering with their minds using compulsion, where they can force you to do as they want. And the only one who everybody knows has good battle strategies and isn't able to be under compulsion is Matt, because he's got that special medallion
right
that he wears under his shirt.
And Matt being in charge is just phenomenal. Now,
yes, it is.
The worst part for me that I don't think works so well is towards the beginning, the whole forging the dragon's peace and those negotiations and everything. It almost goes off the rails a bit. It's saved when Moraine shows up. Like, that's when it turns around. Yeah. But man, that plot line is very close to getting painful as it's initially going on.
It is, but it kind of cements the whole point of why Moraine is so important, because Rand is trying to leave behind a legacy of peace. Like, that with the first dragon, Luthien, the world ended in a breaking and, you know, nothing but turmoil. And so now Rand wants there to not be fighting after he's gone. He wants there to be 100 years of peace. And he tries to force all the nations to agree to that, or he won't go fight the Dark One. And it starts to crumble before him until Moraine shows up and everybody listens to her.
Yeah, so here's the part that doesn't work for me. I agree high level. I like the contrast. What I don't like is it kind of feels like, you know, that momentous scene in Return of the King where they're outside the Black Gate and they're about to have the big climactic battle. And what if we all sat down and tried to hammer out some negotiations between the dwarves and the elves? It doesn't fit with where it's at. It's not believable that we're going to have the UN in the middle of right before the last battle kicks off. It feels like there should be more desperation and not you know, Star Wars prequel-esque trade negotiations.
I guess so, but I don't mind, because it gets so desperate later and so amazingly desperate that it completely undoes all those objections that you're raising.
Is it kind of like, this kind of sounds like, there's a movie that I remember you like, Pirates of the Caribbean, where they stopped in the middle of a battle.
Stopped
in the middle of a battle once, they call a parlay. Mm-hmm. Is it like a parlay?
It's kind of like a parlay.
Okay.
Which of the excellent Pirates of the Caribbean movies are you referencing?
Any of them, probably.
Any, yeah.
This is what tonight's going to be like.
What's your favorite part of the whole battle?
Well, Ben? Yeah. So I love the great captains, and then I think once Matt gets put in charge and they all realize that they have to listen to whatever he says, it's like, this is the moment that character has been leading up to for so long, and it cements my argument I made last week that I actually think Brandon Sanderson does a good job writing Matt, because he's so good in this book. And it's the culmination of 14 books worth of plot for the character. It's fantastic.
He is amazing in this book. And one of the best parts is ultimately, like, everybody has to completely trust Matt. Because it turns out not only were, you know, the generals under compulsion, but there's spies from the shadow everywhere. So if Matt tells any of his battle plans to anybody, then the spy instantly knows and is able to relay messages to the shadow. And then all his battle plans are foiled immediately. So what he starts doing is they use gateways, which is basically teleportation, Matt. He just sends a message through, and then the army already knows, and the spy doesn't have a chance to eavesdrop on what's going on next. And nobody can know what's going on except Matt. And it just becomes completely, everybody wonders what's going on. Everything seems chaotic. And it's only after, like a few minutes later, after they've been wondering about why were we told to go do this? But we did it anyway. Oh, now we see, because there's this huge shadow army over here that we hadn't seen before. And it just, everybody slowly starts realizing that Matt's brilliant in warfare.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I also like Perrin's storyline a lot with the wolf dream and taking on Slayer. And I like how trippy things get with, did you recognize that name?
You said Slayer. Isn't that his mentor?
No.
I thought this was a, he was in the first book, right?
You're who thinking
was
of Elias.
Okay.
But he was in book four.
Yeah. Okay. I like how trippy things get with the different shifting times where towards the boar time works one way. And so you kind of have an Inception type thing going on.
Didn't Perrin get married?
Yeah.
Was his wife in this one?
Yes. Yes, she is.
Okay. Does she have you haven't mentioned her for a couple books. Is she having any important stories?
Oh, she's doing fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure. Her role in this book is fairly minor. She's supposed to retrieve the Horn of Valir from the White Tower. That's the again. Horn that will
calls the past people, right?
All the dead heroes.
Can I
come fight for right?
So this is not a joke. The reason I'm prefacing with that is because I feel like when I do add things to these episodes, it's most of the time not serious. But this one is serious. I remember. Whatever book I first was introduced to this character, there was a character named Arthur Hawkwing.
Yes.
And I remember being intrigued by that character, and I don't think anything really came of that character. What?
He's back.
Is he back in this one?
Yeah, because okay. He's one of the heroes tied to the horn.
Yes. I think they blew the horn. He shows up, and I thought, this seems like a cool character. I hope he's around for a while, but I don't think you've given me any updates on him.
So disappointing.
The way I remember him...
The horn is blown.
The way I remember
it happens two times.
Only twice, like this book and the book earlier?
Yes.
Okay.
Book 2 and book 14.
Book which one? What was the first one you said?
Book 2.
Okay, yeah. I always think of him, the way I remember him is Hawkman, because Hawkman's real name is Carter. And I sometimes feel like it sounds like Carter Hawkwing, but it's really Arthur Hawkwing.
So close.
So yeah, basically Hawkman.
Well, you know, they're going to be adapting book 2 in the next season of Wheel of Time. So if you want to see a really disappointing version of Carter Hawkman, they'll probably call him Carter Hawkman, actually.
The guy who played disappointing, awful Hawkman in Legends of Tomorrow.
Yes. Well, who knows? It may even have his redemption here in the Wheel of Time.
They may even change Arthur Hawkwing to be Hawkman.
And you know, wings I just made a connection in my mind because I've not watched Legends of Tomorrow because in general, the CW quality shows have no appeal to me. And that's when it clicked. Wheel of Time feels like a CW version of this series.
I could see that.
Oh, man.
I haven't watched it, but I could see that just from the trailer.
Yeah.
Sad, but it's true.
Like if you set a spectrum up of on the one end of the spectrum is the CW and on the other end is HBO. The Wheel of Time series is very close to the CW. That's depressing.
You're gonna make me cry.
Yeah. Man.
So back to the cool stuff. One of my favorite parts is you have one of the Forsaken on the battlefield, and he's heading up. He's the Shadows General. And we get a little bit of a glimpse into him. He would have been a good guy. Except that Luz Theron was always just a little bit better at everything than he was. So he was better at, well, he's just more popular, more friendly. He got the girl that Demon Dread wanted. But one thing Demon Dread was better at was war. So he joined the Shadow. And now he's out to settle this once and for all that he's the better swordsman. He wants to duel Rand. And so he keeps on calling out for him. And of course, Rand's not there on the battlefield. He's over fighting the Dark One.
So fun fact, the big white book, The World of Robert Jordan's Wheel of Time, which I think we read for this, actually has that material in it about he and Luce Theron's rivalry.
Yes, I had forgotten it.
That's
but okay. He shows up in this book, too. So first off, you get three characters that go to fight him in single hand-to-hand combat. And the first one's Gawain. And like everything else that he's done, he fails and dies.
Yeah, no big loss. This time. No big loss.
His life is a tragedy, you know? He keeps on, like, right before he goes to fight Demon Dread, like, there's a couple lines about, like, this time he's breaking his vows to save the world. Like, that, and, like, his heart is in the right place. He's trying so hard to do something that's noteworthy. And no matter what, he's just constantly failing. So his life's such a tragedy.
Yeah, he's too stupid.
Aw. I used to hate him, but I've come around to where I mean, he's not my favorite character, but I don't hate him anymore. The next to go up against the Forsaken, this time he doesn't die. It's Galad, Gawain's half-brother. But he actually manages to wound him a little bit. And then he gets his arm cut off a la Luke Skywalker, and he's out of commission.
You know, actually, the whole Trakan family could just be cut out of this books. Elaine, Gawain, Galad, they're all awful.
So, Elaine you don't like?
Well, she gets pretty bad.
That's Rand's main love interest.
Well,
more than Min, more than Aviande.
One of the three.
No.
Yeah, she's his number one as far as I can tell.
The last person to go up against the Forsaken, and this one is Lan. And he's got, Elaine had made some copies of Matt's medallion, and so it makes it where the person wearing it can't be channeled at. So this time, the Forsaken has to fight hand to hand, and he can't use any special tricks from the Force, the One Power. And, it's such a great moment because Demon Dread says, oh, so you've come up here to, who are you? And Lan says, I'm the one who's going to kill you. And towards the end, you know, Lan's getting bloodied. He's been tired. Demon Dread is still fresh. And Lan decides the only way that I'm going to kill him is if I get close enough for him to kill me. But that's okay because I'll have killed him. And it's an amazing moment where you see the Forsaken kind of gloat for a minute, and then Lan just cuts off his head.
Yeah,
and
it's
right at
amazing.
This moment, like, everything else has been going wrong on the battlefield. The forces of light are almost overwhelmed. Birgitta, Elaine's warder, has been killed, and Elaine is about to be, she's in a bad place. She's about to be raped and her children, her unborn babies, cut out of her and taken to the Dark One. And right then, Lan stands up on the battlefield holding Demon Dread's head and everybody rallies. And it's just an incredible moment.
I feel like you really underplayed that when you said she was in a bad place as you went on to describe it. I mean, that's about the worst.
Well, I mean, compared to some other people in the book, that might be preferable.
She is still at least alive yet.
Exactly. Thank you. Matt is getting uncomfortable as we stack up rape compared to other other situations. I'll say this to get off the big R over here and onto safer ground. I love the moment where Lan goes in and he to get the kill shot, he basically has to sacrifice himself. I hate that he's robbed of that sacrifice. He should have been allowed to die then.
Last time that I read it...
Rand, you said?
No, that Lan.
Was my one major nitpick of the book was that only one major character that we really care about dies. And I just felt like it would have been one of the greatest books if it had a little more heart-rending loss. But this time around, I still don't. I don't mind that Lan survives, and him and Nynaeve get there happily ever after.
Yes, they do.
So, Matt, do you want to know who dies?
Yeah, tell me who dies. Last week, I guess it would be Rand. Is it Rand?
We'll get to that. Let's not talk about Rand just yet, because I'm gonna partially gripe on that too.
I did feel a little bit bad about that one too, but so Egwene is the one that dies, but it's such a glorious death. So,
what his childhood sweetheart?
Yeah. What?
His childhood sweetheart?
Yep.
That's true.
Yeah, it's pretty sad. It's also at that moment when like everything's despairing and everything's going wrong and everybody's dying. It seems. So Tame has been out on the battlefield and wrecking havoc, and Egwene has bonded Gawain. When he dies, she kind of starts going into berserker rage, but she gets herself under control, and she sets out to take somebody important down, and it turns out it's Tame. And there's like this force of wills between them both, and she overcomes him. And kills everybody, all the bad guys that are around her, not just Tame, but everybody else that was in her sort of general area, with a huge explosion. And couldn't ask for a better death for Egwene, I think.
It is very good. Should we talk about Rand a little bit and his fate?
Yeah, go ahead. You take it.
Oh, I've got mixed opinions on this. So what happens for Matt is that Rand and Moradin, one of the Forsaken, are in an epic duel in the Boar, and it's not going well. And then Moradin survives while Rand dies, except not quite, because they did a Freaky Friday and switched bodies.
How? Who did that?
It just happened.
How could it just happen?
Just stop. We're going with it.
It just happens, and we have to be okay with that?
That's right, and that's part of why it's a little disappointing. So Rand, it's kind of a have your cake and eat it too, because Rand simultaneously gets the great hero's death, but also gets to live, and everybody's like, Min and Avienda and Elaine aren't too unhappy that he's dead. What's going on? Well, secretly, because they're still bonded to him, so they know what's up. But I gotta imagine that's gonna be pretty weird for them, because now Rand is going through life looking like one of the Forsaken, and it's all a little bit odd. So I don't know that it entirely works. On the other hand, the fact that this was the part of the book Robert Jordan wrote, and he'd written it a long time ago, and he's dead, and all of that. It's like, I can't be too mad about it, but I don't love it.
I have mixed emotions on it. Because you do want Rand to get the ordinary life. It ends up like he can't channel anymore.
But he can manipulate the pattern.
He's going to get to be just a normal guy.
He can't channel, but he can do something, because he's able to light his pipe just by willing it.
He can manipulate the pattern now, because right. In his fight with the Dark One, he was able to start learning how to do that.
Yes. Which seems better.
Yeah. It does seem better.
Is it really obvious when it switches back to the part that Robert Jordan wrote, like from writing style?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. It feels pretty seamless.
Good job, Brandon.
Yeah. All right, so you touched on it a little bit earlier, Ben. Perrin's fight with Slayer. I always forget that, like, they have this really big, epic fight, and then Perrin almost dies, and he doesn't defeat Slayer, and he spends most of the rest of the last battle sleeping to recover. But then right at the end, he manages to get back in, and this time, I don't even know how to describe it. Like, he's full on, just a complete master of the world of dreams, and he just trounces Slayer, defeats him without hardly having to try, and then in the world of dreams, we finally get one last chance, one last attempt by Lanfear. She's the female Forsaken that keeps on, that used to love Luz Theron, and has kept on throwing herself at Rand. Well, this time she's sort of trying for Perrin, except we find out towards the end that she's been very gently using compulsion on him, but only in the world of dreams. And since in the world of dreams, you can affect your surroundings if your mind and will are strong enough, and since he's become a master of the world of dreams, he's able to break her compulsion on him and snap her neck right as she's about to kill Rand.
Yeah, Perrin's arc is fantastic again in the whole series. I think I do like Matt's better, but, you know, yes, seeing Perrin actually come into his own as Mr. Dream Man, full-on Inception, is fantastic.
Right, and he becomes the one who's willing to do what needs to be done no matter how hard it is. And so, like, Rand and Matt and Perrin, they left the Two Rivers, like, we'll never harm a woman or kill her. Matt kind of, like, he and Rand decide we're still never going to kill another woman. It's just too hard for us.
Well, a woman. They're not women themselves, so.
Well, I mean, they've killed women in self-defense, and then they each reach a point where they decide they're not going to kill another woman, is what I meant by that.
Oh, okay.
Thank you for clarifying, though, Ben.
So I want to just take a quick stroll here, because I was thinking about this yesterday. Why is it called the birds and the bees? Because hang on. They don't do anything to each other. Like, the bees have stingers, but that's the best I got. Like, what do the birds do? They just eating seeds.
I don't think it's the birds with the bees. I think it's the birds with the birds and the bees with the bees, and it's just two different examples.
Well, that doesn't make any sense. Why isn't it called the foxes and the bears? Like, everybody does it. It's just
a different fox. Like,
you're either a fox or a bear, you know? It's just, I don't understand it.
That does sound cooler, though. Today, son, we're going to have a talk about the foxes and the bears.
But you know what I mean? Like, that's a horrible explanation, Brian. If that's the reason, there's no reason.
Well, I don't know how it came about.
Anyway, please continue.
I mean, you're older than us. We sort of assumed that you would know.
Oh, I was homeschooled. We never got that talk. Anyway, what else in the novel? Well, I want to get to our rankings here pretty soon, but what else did you want to cover in the actual storyline?
Right. I think we've covered, like, most of the big stuff. What did you think of Pat and Fane's end?
So, this is more of a commentary on the whole book, or on the whole series. I feel like Pat and Fane starts out super important, and then peters off way too much throughout. And so I like that he comes back, but I feel like I wish that character had been a bit more sustained throughout.
Yeah. I am glad that it did get wrapped up. I know a lot of people feel that, like, it just kept on getting bigger and bigger, and then suddenly, so for Matt's sake, it turns out that Pat and Fane is now connected to, like, the gray mist that used to be in Shadar Logoth that would kind of mindlessly go around and kill you if it touched it.
You remember the gray mist.
Well, yeah, it reminded me of Stephen King.
Yeah, so now Matt is able to touch it and not get hurt by it because he once carried that dagger with the ruby in it.
Oh, that's the one he wasn't supposed to have, though.
They kind of compare it to, like, he's immune to it now because he had caught the sickness beforehand. And so he just goes into the mist and stabs Pat and Fane, and then the mist evaporates and Fane dies and the dagger melts away and we're all good now. So a lot of people feel disappointed that it was just that easy after it was this really big, impossible to defeat bad guy.
Yeah, I'm just happy that he got his moment.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
I don't know. It just feels a little like he shows up and you're like, oh no, what's going to happen? He's coming. Matt killed him. Okay, well, I guess we're good then.
It's true. I am glad Matt killed him, though, because they share the dagger connection. So that feels right.
Yes, that does. I don't know. I didn't really have too much more on the plots and the storyline that I wanted to cover. But what I love the most about this is that the whole book just feels so epic as the forces of light desperately make their last stand. And it just feels so full of emotion. You have the moment where everything's desperate. It's all going wrong. And then Lan raises up, comes standing back up. He's got Demon Red's head in his hand. And the Horn of Valyr suddenly is blown, and all the heroes come to defend the forces of light. And, like, it's a complete... It feels very much like Return of the King, where everything's desperate. Or no, yeah, Return of the King when Gondor is being attacked. And, everything's really dark and desperate, and then the Rohirrim arrive on the hillside as the dawn breaks, and they charge, and it's just this glorious moment. And then again, later on, it gets really desperate, and then Aragorn shows up with his Deathless Army, and it's got those vibes. It
100% does. I completely agree. The scope of this book is exactly what a series of this scope deserved as its cap. Oh, it's like almost as good of an ending as The Rise of Skywalker. Not quite, but they can't all be that good. All right, should we get to our rankings of the entire series? So here it is at the end. Now, did you rank New Spring along with yours?
I will just go ahead and start ranking.
I think Matt and I should rank them too. The ones we read.
That seems like a terrible idea. So should we start at number 15? And give
Which
us
Which one's 15?
Well, your least favorite. So we're going from least favorite to favorite. So there's 15 books including New Spring.
Okay.
So you go first, Melissa, as our guest. What's your number 15?
Well, my absolute least favorite is book 10. That one is, you could delete that book from the series, and I think we'd be fine.
Yeah, reaction videos, which are very popular on YouTube, that is a 700-page reaction video, book 10, which I agree, so far we're in lockstep. book 10, Crossroads of Twilight, the worst in the series. All right, number 14.
New Spring, just because it adds nothing, really.
New Spring is coming up very soon on my list, but I'm going to say Path of Daggers on this. I feel like Path of Daggers, not quite as bad as Crossroads of Twilight, but it's the first one that doesn't really have an epic ending, and it's very non-memorable to me.
Okay.
Number 13.
Book 9, that's Winter's Heart. I feel like there's so much of Perrin kind of moping around over the fact that Fael was kidnapped.
But book 9 in my mind gets a little bit of a boost due to the ending and the cleansing. It's hard for me to understand ranking that below book 8.
I liked Book 8 a lot better this time. I feel like there's more of Rand going haywire.
That is true. He does go haywire. Anyway, my number 13 is New Spring. I actually dislike New Spring quite a bit more this time than I have previous times I've read it. I agree, not a lot happens. And yeah, enough of that. All right, you're number 12.
Book 8. Path of Daggers.
All right, so we have them ranked slightly different, but my number 12 is Winter's Heart, so we agree in whatever order we put them in, those four are the worst. All right, number 11.
Book 7, A Crown of Swords.
So
I feel like it gets pretty good right at the end, but there's not too much happens throughout.
I agree. I think that I do like some of the response to Dumai's Wells at the beginning, but it is sort of the beginning of the slog. However, my number 11... Go ahead.
I was just going to say, after the ending of Book 6 with Dumai's Wells, like anything was going to feel like a bit of a letdown coming off of that high.
I agree. This is true. My number 11... I've seen people rank this a lot higher. I think I would have ranked it a lot higher until this read-through. The Dragon Reborn. I think this book's kind of a mess. Rand's not a POV character for most of it. I think Robert Jordan was experimenting with the structure and didn't entirely work. I think that the ending feels like a regurgitation of the ending of the last two books. It's not terrible, but it's not great.
Well... that's my number 10 is book 3.
All right. And my number 10 was a Crown of Swords. So our order is slightly differing, but we're very in lockstep so far.
Yeah.
All right. Number 9 for you.
Probably book 11, which is Knife of Dreams.
Yep.
It's, cause we're getting into the really good books. We've I'd say brushed aside all of the ones where not much really happens, but there's still Knife of Dreams still has the rest of the succession. Elaine's gaining the throne to Andor, and that's such a slog.
Yeah, I have Knife of Dreams in this spot, too. I think my argument for putting it ahead of A Crown of Swords, I think they're of comparable quality, but Knife of Dreams always feels better because where A Crown of Swords is slowing down, A Knife of Dreams is speeding up, even though I think they are relatively the same in terms of quality and amount that happens.
Right.
All right, number 8.
I mean, the next one's kind of... You could make arguments for where they're going to fall. They're all about equal, in my opinion. I'm going to say book 12. Well, let's say, yeah, I don't know. I guess let's say book 2, but it's really good as well.
So to me, there is a distinct delineation of, you know, if we were to put these into tiers... This would now be my second to best tier. My top four, I think, are all on next level. So in this tier, I would start it with The Eye of the World. I think, love it. Lots of nostalgia for it. It is incredibly conventional when it comes to fantasy tropes. I think the series didn't really come into its own until later on. Gets a little repetitive with, you know, confronting dark friends. Love it, but... It's not as good as what came later. You're number 7.
I'm going to say it's book 5.
Okay.
The Fires of Heaven.
Oh, so now this is our first major disagreement. And I won't say where it is, but The Fires of Heaven is a top tier book for me.
It's really good, but it feels kind of like an in-between book.
I can see that argument until you actually read it. Like when you actually, because it doesn't stand out quite as much as Lord of Chaos or Shadow Rises, but it's so good. There's so much that happens in there. You have Asmodian training Rand. You have Moraine's death. You have the conclusion of Lanfear. you have the Aiel coming out of the waste and beginning to invade. I love the fires of heaven. My number seven would be Towers of Midnight. So the penultimate book, which I liked it a lot more this time around than I disliked it last time, but I remembered being a little bit more ambivalent to it and really, really enjoyed it this time. Your number six.
It's going to be book 12.
Okay.
The Gathering Storm.
I have that one just a little bit higher. I love Darth Rand, and so I think that's why. Yeah. My number six is The Great Hunt. This is one that always surprises me, because I always remember it as being not quite as memorable, and then it's super good when you read it. It introduces Tel Arandriad, you've got Lanfear, really expands the world, you have Chester Hawknut, or whatever his name was. it's just lots of good stuff. Number five for you.
That's what I say was Ardor Hawkwing.
All right.
Great character.
I agree.
Sorry, Melissa, go ahead.
You're number five, Melissa.
Yes, I'm running out of. I must have missed one somewhere.
You should have five books left.
I should. I'm trying to figure out which number I've skipped.
So I know you haven't done. I don't think we've heard Towers of Midnight from you. Lord of Chaos, A Memory of Light, Shadow Rises, or The Eye of the World.
Okay. My next one is number 13, is Towers of Midnight.
I agree. It feels about the right place. I have The Gathering Storm at number 5. All right, top 4. Your number or top 3 if you've lost count. And I won't judge you too harshly.
Yeah,
if
which
you have.
Ones that I'm still missing?
So you're missing The Eye of the World, The Shadow Rises, Memory of Light, and Lord of Chaos.
That was the one. Shadow Rises. Lord of Chaos is the next one.
For your number 4?
I think 4. Shadow Rises is a little bit better than that one.
I agree. I have Lord of Chaos at number 4 as well. These are top tier books for me.
Yeah, because Lord of Chaos is so good. It's got Demise Wells, but it's a little slow at the beginning.
I agree. Completely agree. Number 3
Whereas
for you.
Whereas Shadow Rising is my next one, and it's pretty great all throughout.
Now, so do you have Eye of the World is in your top 2?
It's my second favorite.
Oh my gosh. We're going to disagree on that in a second.
Well, because it's so classic. You can read it as a standalone. Like, it's not none of the others are dependent on it. And you don't feel like you've got to keep reading after you read that one. I mean, you can, and you might want to, but it's not a cliffhanger either.
That's not an argument in its favor, though, because if The Eye of the World was a standalone, it would be completely forgotten as a novel. It's not that good.
I don't know. I've never gotten tired of it every time I read it.
I could not disagree more. All right. We skipped ahead on you because I couldn't believe it. But my number 3 is The Fires of Heaven, which we've already talked about. Number 2 for me is A Memory of Light.
Okay.
Which means my number 1 is The Shadow Rises. And yours is A Memory of Light.
Wow. That's your favorite.
That's my favorite. It's got the Aiel. It's got the whole, the history of the Aiel. It has Rand really coming into his own. You know, it's to me, that's the moment where Robert Jordan pushes the gas down all the way. The series goes to a next level. If you think of like the first 3 books, they're kind of like flirting with the idea of being this giant series, or do we just want to be, you know, another Lord of the Rings knockoff? And they've been sort of inching their way forward, and The Shadow Rises is the moment where it's all in and the series just becomes incredible.
I can see that. I hear you. The quote, Matt.
But I also like A Memory of Light. It's a fine number 2.
Yeah, well, and like I don't know if I said it earlier, but like, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Book 7, or number 7 and up on my list, so where I started with book 2.
Yeah.
Maybe it was book 11. definitely book two. Numbers 7 and up, those are on a whole different tier, like you said, from the rest.
I agree. Those are all just great books. All right. So that's our ranking. Now, I promise to talk about the Outrigger novels, but before I do, because you've never heard of these, correct, Melissa?
No.
This is a major gap in your Wheel of Time lore.
And I forgot all about it again.
Okay. So before I do that, there is actually some Wheel of Time stuff or some other books Robert Jordan had planned. The Outrigger novels he had planned too, but we'll end on those because they're maybe the most intriguing. Do you know what his follow-up series was going to be to the Wheel of Time?
I don't, but I know that there is... So we talked about Demon Dread, the Forsaken General.
Yeah.
There's a story that got published in a collection with like a bunch of different authors of how he goes to Shara. It's this land that's very briefly been mentioned throughout the series.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like this mystery land that nobody really has seen too much. And mostly there's just wild stories about it. And it's the story about how he goes and kind of becomes an anti-dragon. In fact, they call him the Dragon Slayer, and he becomes their savior, their hope of redemption. And so he converts that whole nation, as it were, and gets them to follow him.
Really? I didn't know about that.
That story.
That's fascinating.
Yes. Huh. Yeah. And like, he goes and fulfills prophecies over there, actually.
And that's something that Robert Jordan wrote that?
Brandon Sanderson wrote it.
Oh, okay.
But it was, I think, from Jordan's notes.
Gotcha. Oh, I see. The River of Souls. Interesting. I've never read that. I'll have to look that up. So the other Robert Jordan material, his follow-up series was going to be called Infinity of Heaven. He was planning it to be kind of still a fantasy, but sort of a samurai shogun-influenced thing. And he was going to keep it short, just two trilogies for 6 books. I think we all know there's not a chance that would have happened. He also planned 2 other prequel novels to fill in the gap between New Spring and Eye of the World. This could have gone either way. Like, this could have made New Spring better. By like, oh, that was the start of this cool prequel trilogy, or it could have been a complete waste of time for everybody.
I tend to lean towards the latter.
Well, you know you would have read them, though. All right.
Of course.
The interesting one, though.
You gotta find out if it's crap or not.
This is true. The interesting one, though, is the Outrigger novels. So... this was a trilogy that Robert Jordan had hinted at and actually wrote some scenes of that would have followed at least Perrin and Matt following the events of A Memory of Light. So what's interesting about it is that there was some talk for a while about Brandon Sanderson possibly writing these, and ultimately he and Harriet McDougall decided no, but I guess Tom Doherty from Tor Books really wanted these to be written. So he was pushing for it for a long time while Brandon Sanderson was doing the end of the series. So there's, outside of whatever outline would have existed, which I don't think has ever really been described, Brandon Sanderson has described 2 scenes that Robert Jordan did write for these. One of which is Perrin on his way. He's on a boat crossing the sea, and he's thinking about how he's going to have to kill a friend of his. Maybe Matt, but that's not spelled out in the scene. And then the other one is of Matt slumped outside of a tavern, having just lost everything gambling. So presumably his luck has inverted itself.
Make it all back.
What's that?
I'll make it all back.
I'm sure he would have eventually, but I think the idea is that his luck has stopped working or something like that.
You know, I learned this on Lost, so I'm not sure if everybody has seen that show or knows this, but an outrigger is a boat.
Yes, it is. Because of this, and you're referencing the famous scene with the outrigger canoes where the people were being shot at and we were all excited for what's the solution to that mystery. Never found out.
Yeah, well, I kind of know, but that's a story for a different day.
Right. Anyway, I think those would have been interesting I think I am glad that Brandon Sanderson has not gone Brian Herbert with Wheel of Time. I think Brandon Sanderson's approach to this, and Harriet McDougal's too, is a textbook example of how to respectfully finish a career.
Yes. Leave the rest up to our imaginations.
I agree completely.
There's enough there for where people can say, oh, it would have, you know, everything would have collapsed afterwards because of, you know, this nation went just as too trigger happy and they'd rise up, or no, everybody really did get along and they entered a new golden age, or, you know, maybe a blend of both.
That said, I do think it's such a shame that the TV show sucks and is probably going to get canceled in a year or two, because I do think with TV projects, I'd be more interested in seeing, you know, a sequel series or a prequel series. I think a series done in the Wars of Power would have been really interesting. But clearly, Rafe is not up for that. He's barely up for operating a camera, let alone filming an entire series. So I'm not going to hold my breath.
Well, I'm not as into the Wheel of Time fan group that I was part of on Facebook anymore. But because they got pretty petty on there, people were like, oh, you either have to love the TV show and the books, or not just the books, but also the TV show, or you're not a true Wheel of Time lover, which is just stupid.
A wheelie.
A wheelie, yeah, not a true wheelie. I guess I'm not a true wheelie if I can't remember that term.
Is that the actual term? I just made that up off the top of my head. It should be if it isn't. I agree completely.
Really should be. Anyway.
Any closing thoughts for you, Melissa?
At least. What?
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead. Finish your thought.
Anyway, those people on there on Facebook were saying that at least we've gotten the name out into the TV world, so that there's still a chance that there will be a remake. Now
that is delusional. Oh yeah,
like right from episode one, people were like, "Well, time to hit the cancel button and just sit around and wait for somebody to come on and do a remake." Which there's enough money in it there if somebody will do it right, and you know, you wait long enough, somebody will come around and redo Dune, and sure it'll be fantastic. So
sure they're making plenty of money from it not being great as well. So,
this is true. Maybe Elon Musk will buy the rights, turn Twitter into a movie studio. You know, a man can dream.
Yeah. What were you going to say?
I was just going to ask, any final thoughts here for you at the very end of the Wheel of Time, both podcast and book series?
Well, I guess I'm really glad that you guys let us come along and do this with you, and glad that there's other people out there that really enjoy this book series, and hopefully we've inspired a few of the sci-fi Christian listeners to go check out this series.
I'm very grateful that you stepped in, Melissa, when someone else quit halfway through.
Not even halfway through.
It wounded me to the core, but I'm glad we finished the series. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Melissa, for taking my spot.
Ben?
Yes?
Melissa? How long will it be before you reread it?
I don't know. 20 years.
Okay.
Probably when the next baby is born. That's usually about when I'm like, okay, I need something that I really enjoy and I need to check out. Like, postpartum is always really rough for me. So that's when I'm, that's usually when I reread The Wheel of Time. It's my favorite, or a favorite fantasy world for me, and I can just lose myself in the books, and it's a good time to escape from reality for a little bit.
I agree. I think that if I was ever to get pregnant and have a baby, I would also read it afterwards. That feels right.
Yes.
Anyway, on that note, thank you.
I have a question. Brian, you know, they're talking about rereading this long series. If you were going to reread a series that you have finished, which one would you pick? Or which one are you considering right now, if that is a true thing? And while you think about it, I'll tell you mine. I have read in the recent years Hyperion, and then I forgot how do you say the second part of that?
Endymion.
That's only four books, but they're long. I've been considering revisiting those books. Brian, what's your answer?
I was just trying to think the other day if I would ever reread the Chronicles of Amber, Zelazny fantasy series.
Yeah.
Probably not, but maybe those.
Yeah,
that's a long one.
I enjoyed those.
Those aren't long. That's like one Wheel of Time book.
Each one is not long. That's true.
I kind of feel like it would be the equivalent of two Wheel of Time books, right? Maybe not even.
Yeah, I'd say one to two Wheel of Time.
Five of those books is one Wheel of Time book.
That feels about right.
Yeah. All right, I'm hitting the music. You guys won't be able to hear it. Listeners, wow, 14 books worth of episodes, plus the big white book. There's a prequel in there. What a journey we've been on. And if you want to find out how that journey's gone and when we release those past episodes, stay tuned for after the credits or after the music. Well, that's all
from
here.
Don't you have to go?
I'm Ben Anderson.
You're going to be a soccer coach. I'm Ben DiVono.
We're the Cozers.
And we are the Sci-Fi Christians. Signing off. Yeah, Cozers, you don't know why I have to leave so fast today, but I'm going to my very first coaches meeting. I am officially going to be a soccer coach this year.
Oh.
What?
You know enough about soccer?
What age level?
Well, both great questions. The age level is, my second grader is on the team, so it's around that age. And my experience is I personally played soccer between kindergarten and sometime in junior high.
Yeah, I see two mini soccer balls in this bin over here.
So I'd say probably around 6th, 7th, 8th grade is where I stopped playing soccer. But sometimes...
Can I see a new sports podcast?
Oh, yeah. 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 That's a great idea. Inside something soccer related. So we'll figure it out. So, so watch for that in the future. But for now, so long, folks. All right, we're off. I have to hang up on you immediately.
Goodbye, all Cozers. Right.
Hey, we escaped all the rest of the fun facts.
Oh, reminded me. Oh, yeah, that's
goodbye.
No.
You've got to go.
I forgot about this.
You're going to be late.
No, everybody, let me have my 3 minutes past the music here. All right. Book one, we released. This was episode 733, released on July 3rd.
We're going to clip all of this.
July 3rd, 2019. Then episode 757. About book two, also in 2019, October 9th, 2019. Those were the only two books we covered in 2019, which brings us to the year 2020, February 4th, right before the pandemic. Book three, that was episode 785. And then it was the very next month. So, wow, I remember actually reading that or listening to that one while I was working out at the gym. I just got back into working out. I was going very regularly. The pandemic hits. I don't go anymore.
Yeah, we got 14 of these.
Let me just keep going.
We can't hear about your gym.
If you keep stopping me, I'll never make it.
In your voice, Matt, is incredible.
What did you say?
The sheer relish as you're going through these.
All right, just give me 3 minutes, it'll be over. Book four, we released this episode. Oh, it was episode 798, released on March 27th, 2020. You know, 2020 was a great year. Even though, when it came
I almost took off my headphones and I realized I'd still be able to hear it.
Yes. So 2020 was a great year when it came to Wheel of Time. It was of all the episodes that were released, most of them, well, a lot of them came out in 2020. Let me see how many there were. 5 books were discussed then. So let's look at episode 800.
You're going to get fired from being a soccer coach.
Episode 830, book 5. That was released on July 30th, 2020. Episode 841, about book 6, released on September 21st, 2020. Then look at this. We talked about the big white book in episode 853. That was November 12th, 2020. I failed to mention that it was in the midst of book 6 that Melissa joined us. So thank you again, Melissa. So here we are. Now moving on to 2021.
You're putting my third daughter to sleep.
That's great.
Yeah.
Episode 877. Oh, wow. It's 877, about book 7. We released that on January 29th, 2021. Almost done. Book 8. We talked about that during episode 902, and we decided to give this a subtitle of our favorite fish. Do you guys remember our favorite fish?
Oh, yeah. That was good.
That was a good one.
That was good.
Released on March 31st, 2021. Next up, we talked about books 9 and 10 together during episode 965, which we released on August 30th, 2021. And get this, everybody listening and podcasting friends, that was the last episode that we released related to the Wheel of Time until we recorded together last Tuesday. So we went from August 30th, 2021, all the way until...
No, you're missing one.
Oh,
you're
shoot,
missing
you're
book
right.
11.
And here's book 11 and the prequel we discussed on March 2nd, 2022, but there still is a big gap there. August 2021 to March 2022. And then, listeners, you won't believe it, but between episode 1027, that's 1027, where we discussed books 11 and a prequel, that was, this was also subtitled Another Udder, which is an even better subtitle. So again, March 2nd, 2022, all the way to last Tuesday, which we recorded that on May 10th, 2022. Here we are, May 17th, 2022, wrapping this whole thing up. And that, everybody, is Unweaving the Wheel of Time.
You know, I thought book 10 was a slog.
Hey, what? You give it? I didn't talk for this whole episode. I got 3 minutes at the end. This is great. Well, I got to go to a coach's meeting. See y'all next time.
All right. Goodbye.
Bye, guys.
Bye. Have a great night. Thanks again.